Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 7, Episode 22, There Will Be Blood, written by Andrew Dabb and Daniel Laughlin, and directed by Guy Norman Bee. Yet another episode where there's just a lot of things happening. Cass is in full-on denial mode, and doesn't even appear in this episode. He's just off doing his own thing, leaving Sam and Dean to solve all the problems. Dick is tormenting Kevin, and our heroes are getting duped by teenage girls, while Ghost Bobby goes full vengeful and off the rails. Plus, we see how badly the Leviathan are affecting not just the human population, but also the monster population via the Alpha Vampire, and the demons via Crowley. And we get a very brief look at Andrew Dabb in his most famous supernatural role, Guy staring at potato chip rack. The Leviathans have infiltrated almost every corner of the American food market through their toxic corn syrup, taking away even more things from Dean in a last-ditch effort to crush him into submission. I mean, he can't even have his pie. And I'll have things to say about Dean and pie and family and metaphors when we get there. For all the plot things that are necessarily happening in the penultimate episode of the season, I really just don't have a lot of notes on this one. Even most of my notes talk about it in passing between the previous episode and the next one, the season finale. Because yes, this one is busy, but mostly in setting up the finale. We should probably just plow through it, starting with the then segment. And apologies if my voice sounds a little craggy today. I have just been not feeling great, so we'll do our best. We're flung back to season 6 for a refresher course on alphas, especially the Alpha Vampire, and that whole prison that Crowley had kept all the monsters in that Cass obliterated for him. We're then reminded of Dick Roman's enterprises across a wide array of industries, and Ghost Bobby losing control and borderline going vengeful when confronted by Dick. We see poor Kevin Tran, advanced placement prophet of the Lord, getting switched online by the Leviathan tablet and translating a spell that's supposed to help them kill the Leviathan. They've got Cass's blood, the fallen angel, and they only need two more bloods now. And since this episode is called There Will Be Blood, they're kind of promising delivery on some of that. And then finally, we see poor Kevin getting captured by the Leviathans at the end of the last episode. And then we come to now. Like I said, we're just motoring through all the things happening so much here. There's not a lot of time to pause, reflect, and dissect, which is probably for the best. Anyway, we open on a news interview with Dick Roman discussing his purchase of a company called SucroCorp that manufactures high fructose corn syrup. While he's talking about America being a country full of go-getters, we get a little montage of what we'll refer to as corn syrup zombies, just eating their snack foods and staring out into space and looking generally stoned out of their minds. Including my favorite cameo by a writer on Supernatural, Andrew Dabb just staring at a chip rack in the background of a gas and sip in Hoople, North Dakota, staffed by a guy named Mott. And then we cut to the title card. When we return, Dick's just staring at the reporter who interviewed him like he wants to eat her. His assistant Susan arrives and hands him a briefcase with the Leviathan tablet in it. Guess it took an actual Leviathan to pry it out of Kevin's hands. Dick then orders Susan to put a, quote, replace order on Gloria the reporter, so the Leviathans will have someone well-positioned in the media to control their propaganda. R.I.P. poor Gloria for being too competent at her job, I guess. And yes, Dick does plan to eat her. Barbecue. Dick heads over to his next meeting, where Kevin is just sitting in a conference room, bound and gagged, looking terrified while Edgar stares at him. Dick hands him the tablet and asks him what it says. Kevin tries to lie, but Dick doesn't buy that he has no idea. And Dick orders Edgar to cut him free, and for a second Kevin thinks he's about to be murdered, but nope. Dick's going to try to schmooze him into giving him what he wants. Flattery doesn't work, so Dick offers a personal letter of recommendation for Kevin to Princeton. And if you'll recall, that is everything that Kevin thought he wanted just a few days ago. You know, almost a guaranteed admission to the school that he'd been so terrified he wouldn't be accepted to. His whole life on a platter, to use a phrase that Sam used in the pilot episode of the entire series. And Kevin cannot trade humanity for that. He's got a soul, man. So Dick turns from bribery to threats. Edgar pulls up a live feed showing Kevin's mother, also bound and gagged and being held at knife point. And Dick is confident that Kevin will transcribe that tablet for him now. At the Winchester's cabin, with yet another old hoopty parked out front, they're researching their little hearts out. Dean can't make any sense of most of the tablet translation, despite numerous reads of it. Dean says he read it more times than the Playboy he found in their dad's duffel bag. And Sam replies, "Anna Nicole?" And Dean waxes nostalgic over it. And I'm going to talk about this for a second, because Dean didn't say that he'd been staring at the translations or even, like, studying the translations. He said he read it, meaning the words in the articles. I recall a really good post about this exact exchange and that specific issue of Playboy and the articles it contained, but I'll be danged if I can find it right this second. One of the features in that magazine was a conversation between Joseph Heller and Kurt Vonnegut, who we all know is one of Dean's favorite authors. And possibly more interesting is that the magazine contained an excerpt from Spalding Gray's novel Impossible Vacation, which, to steal from the Amazon description, is, quote, about a man eternally searching for a moment of protected pleasure, even as he is permanently incapable of finding it. And if that ain't Dean, man, Dean would kill for that. Anyway, back to this episode. All Dean's learned from the translation is that they need to kill Dick. Cut off the head and the body will flounder. I do think it's horrible and depressing that he gives that incredibly simple-sounding plan while drinking an El Sol beer. How desperate is Dean for that impossible vacation? Like the unscheduled vacation he's about to take to Purgatory when his simple little plan comes to fruition. Sam tries to poke holes in this not really much of a plan. So what happens to the rest of the Leviathan if they kill Dick? Do the rest of them just drop dead? And Dean can only shrug. He has no idea. But they don't really have a lot of options. And Dean's sole plan all season long has been to kill Dick, no matter what. For him, this is a personal revenge mission, almost as much as it is for the borderline vengeful spirit of Ghost Bobby. And that is also concerning. Sam keeps pushing an agenda of rationality, and honestly good for him, saying that they should really have a better understanding of the consequences before they go barging in, and Dean flat out replies that that's probably the catch, since the whole plan came straight from the word of God himself. They are already painfully familiar with the catches in God's plans for them, you know? They're used to being tricked into doing something even worse, trying to solve one problem, you know? That's kind of their life story. Neither of them are happy about these facts, and as they both continue to mull over their very short list of options, we see Bobby just loitering in the background, looking equally discontented with this situation. Later on, as Dean brushes his teeth, his breath fogs and the mirror ices over. He turns to find Bobby standing there looking just a little bit guilty. Dean is really concerned for him, tries to convince him to save his strength, but Bobby is on an end run toward his goal. He's single-minded about the spell that Dean had been having very little luck with. Bobby explains what the missing ingredients are. The other two bloods of the fallen, blood from Crowley, and blood from a monster alpha. Dean reminds Bobby that all the alphas are dead because they rounded them up for Crowley and then Cass slaughtered them all. Bobby says that this is Cass's problem too then, and he should help, but Dean knows that Cass is not in a helping mood. Bobby's getting impatient with Dean and says, then get Crowley. Dean mutters that yes, he gets it, they have things they could be doing, and Bobby gets so upset at Dean's lack of urgency that the mirror cracks. And Dean looks incredibly wary that Bobby is losing control, but he gathers himself back up and calmly says that he has faith in Sam and Dean, and that they'll figure it out. Back in the main room, Dean warns Sam that Bobby's ghost is now hanging out in the bathroom and explains that he had some thoughts about their weapon. Sam has been watching SucroCorp videos, and at least he instantly grasps the widespread issues, because corn syrup is in practically everything they eat. There's nothing they can do to stop everyone on the planet from being exposed to it. While they're talking about that, the laptop slams shut, redirecting them back to the course of action that Bobby wants them to pursue. They set up a summoning ritual for Crowley, and he appears instantly. We then cut back to Kevin and his ill-gotten bribe of a letter to Princeton, finishing up his second transcription of the Leviathan tablet. They have Kevin's mom released, but Dick is holding on to Kevin just a bit longer. And Edgar is sent on a mysterious mission to visit an old friend. Back at the cabin, after they've explained the whole Leviathan tablet thing to Crowley, and what they need from him to finish the spell to kill Dick, all Crowley seems interested in is knowing who translated the tablet for them. So he already knows at least a little something about the tablets. Crowley does agree to give him his blood, but only after they've gathered the rest of the ingredients. He's a smart man. He doesn't want his blood just floating around out there. He's got enemies who would happily use it against him. Crowley does wrongly assume that the most difficult blood to collect would be the angel blood, because he has no idea that Cass is still alive and doesn't think any other angel would help Sam and Dean Winchester. But he does know that there is one alpha still alive, the alpha vampire, who fled before Cass went nuclear on his monster jail. Crowley tells them that he knows where they can start the hunt for him, and then vanishes. A second later, the table catches fire and burns the words, Hoople, North Dakota, into the wood. And I'm with Dean, man. You could have just used a piece of paper here. No, you had to dramatically deface their only table. Later on, at a gas station in Hoople, Sam wants a private word with Dean out of Bobby's earshot, so Dean leaves the flask in the car, and they headed to the shop. Sam's concerned that Bobby seemed angry. Dean tries to defend Bobby for a bit. Like, wouldn't you be angry? Sam thinks they need to do something about Bobby before he loses all his humanity. Dean's kind of offended at this. What, just, like, kill him? Like, that's awful. Because there's not a single case that they know of a ghost who doesn't eventually go vengeful, cause havoc, possess people, kill people. And, this is foreshadowing. So while they're having this very serious conversation about Bobby in the Gas and Sip convenience store, they're completely surrounded by incredibly stoned-looking shoppers. Sam is so focused on Bobby's issues that he doesn't notice until Dean points out a guy very carefully applying a metric fuckton of mustard to a hot dog. and then a woman standing at an open cooler case and just staring at a selection of identical beer cans like she can't make up her mind which one she wants, even though they're all exactly the same. And another guy pouring a slushie while simultaneously drinking it up through a straw. And then Sam realizes they look like the turducken people. The Leviathan corn syrup is already in the food, and everything in that store is probably tainted with it. Dean, of course, is not happy. He needs his road food. He just wants his one little slice of pie already. It's like his only pleasure he has left in his life. Dean reaches the third stage of grief and desperately asks Sam if the pie that says it's all natural is safe. Sam has to burst his bubble that corn syrup is technically natural. The only thing they're left with the ability to eat in this store is apparently bananas and bottled water. And heck, Sam, you could try some beans and rice maybe. Like, make some pasta with fresh tomato sauce from scratch. Cooking is a thing, and not everything is a processed food with corn syrup in it. But I get it, when you live in a motel room, it's not like you have access to a 5-star kitchen. But really, I mean, you could do better than bananas and water. And I'd like to point out, the pie and then the Margie Kugel sign in the background, these are all things that Dean associates with comfort, home, family. And he's being denied all of it. Even just access to things that are tiny little representations of what those feelings of comfort, home, and family are to him. And while we're already on a tangent, in the fuss about Bobby and the spell and Dick and the plot, I forgot to mention that Dean is wearing his famous purgatory jacket. Everyone loves this jacket, but probably most especially Jensen. It was custom made for him, with all of his specifications for hidden pockets, for weapons, and apparently it fit him like a glove. He loved this jacket. He was so happy with it. He'd apparently been wanting something like it for a while, and figured if they were going through so much time, trouble, and expense to make it, it would become a long-standing part of his wardrobe. And then it got sent to Purgatory, and that was pretty much the end of it. It's just heartbreaking. Let's have a moment of preemptive silence for that jacket. At least we get to enjoy it for the next couple of episodes, right? Okay, so later that night, they're staking out the house that they believe might be their lead on the Alpha. But the house is dark and they can't see any movement inside. So Bobby zaps out to scope the place out before they can stop him. He returns a minute later with the all clear, but there's something they need to see. Inside, they find 3 dead vampires laid across the dining room table, and their mouths and faces are just completely burned up like they'd, as Dean said, drank battery acid. Sam notices a wall that just doesn't look right. Bobby zaps himself through the wall to find a very pink bedroom occupied by a teenager. Out in the other room, Sam and Dean scramble to find a lever or a latch to unlock the hidden door, and Sam finds a button on a bookshelf hidden behind a book labeled To Serve Man, which is very funny, vampires. And for anyone who doesn't get that joke, that's the title of a Twilight Zone episode about an alien invasion. The aliens claim to be working for the good of humanity, kind of like Dick is in this episode when he does his little news interviews. And it's only at the end of that episode that the humans discover the aliens' book called To Serve Man is actually a cookbook. They were going to literally cook and serve man, kind of like the Leviathans are. Inside the girl's room, she looks scared by her intruders. They put their weapons away and assure her they're not going to hurt her. They don't have any fangs. They all sit down and she tells them her story of being kidnapped when she was 8. She is one of the Alpha Vampire's, quote, special girls that he feeds on. The other vampires were her caretakers. She doesn't even eat solid food, subsisting only on IV bags to keep her blood pure. and she's been living like that for 12 years. We later learn her name's Emily, but instead of just continuing to refer to her as that girl, I'm just going to call her Emily. Dean has given Emily his jacket to wear, and Sam assures her that they'll get her back to her mother. The girl doesn't think her mom will even remember her because she can't remember her mom. And the reaction shot on that one goes to Dean, who also barely remembers his own mother, but who was never allowed to forget her either. He awkwardly changes the subject back to the three dead vampires. Apparently, they went out a week ago to hunt, easily took three humans who didn't even put up a fight, but the ones who ate from those humans died immediately. The only vampire who didn't eat from one of those tainted humans is out now hunting for animals to eat. Sam figures it out, though, that maybe the burns on these vampires' faces is a reaction to the corn syrup. Those stoned humans wouldn't put up a fight, just like Emily described them having a very easy hunt. When Sam pulls out his phone, Emily has a confused look and asks him what it is. She's really leaning into the innocent lamb act, yes? Because as repeat viewers, we already know a lot of this is very definitely an act she's putting on. And because Dean doesn't know that, he just flat out lies to her, thinking that she will be easy to just manipulate, and that's kind of just as awful as what the vampires have done to her whole life, you know? This guy's supposed to be her rescuer, and he can't even deliver her honest truth when she asks for it. It's kind of like she's testing the waters out with these guys. I think, you know, having grown up in the sphere of the alpha vampire, this is how she's learned to behave. Nothing that the alpha will do later will even cause her to flinch at all. That's how you deal with people. And so I think, yeah, in that way, she is behaving in exactly that way. That's kind of a little test, and Sam and Dean kind of wildly fail. But I mean, what else are they supposed to do? Try and sit down this girl who's been taken from society for a dozen years and doesn't even know what a phone is? And sit her down and explain technology to her when they've got a mission that they're on. So, yeah, I mean, totally reasonable thing. Dean just calls it Sam's douche tracker and says that it'll help them find the alpha. All they need is to enter his address. She doesn't know it, but maybe she can help them find it. Later that night, when the other vampire returns from his animal hunt, he finds Emily gone and panics. He's not alone, though, because Edgar is there, and he wants to know where the alpha is. The vampire tries to attack Edgar, tells him to go to hell, and Edgar nearly breaks his arm and then tells him that his neighborhood is worse than hell. Edgar then transforms into that vampire, taking all of his knowledge, so he learns exactly where the alpha is, and then kills him. The next day, Sam and Dean leave a market with a full bag of produce, while Dean complains he can't live on rabbit food. Sam thinks it's kind of hilarious, but they've got a schedule to keep. They need dead man's blood. Or, Dean realizes what might be even better, the blood of one of the corn syrup zombie people. Since it seems to be a vampire poison, and they won't even have to rob a morgue to get it. They approach a dude wearing a Plucky Penny Whistles t-shirt, sitting on a bench advertising Biggersons, and sucking down a giant slushy mushy through two straws. Sam tries to play it straight, saying that he's from the Red Cross and asking for emergency blood donations, and very quickly realizes the guy is not processing anything that Sam is saying. So Dean just sits down beside the guy and tells him to hold out his arm because they need his blood. Sam is momentarily offended by Dean's just flat out saying it, but shockingly it actually works. Guy just holds out his arm. Dean just pulls out a syringe and tells Sam to get to work. And Sam is still glancing around nervously, like, right here, Dean, out in public where anyone can see us? and Dean has again grasped the reality of their situation before Sam does. Every single person around them is just as stoned out of their minds as this guy is. Nobody is going to notice. Sam goes in through the back of the guy's hand, and his only reaction is a little, ow. And then their unwitting blood donor finally asks, this is for Hurricane Katrina, right? And I need to point out that Hurricane Katrina happened 7 years before this episode aired. But that's just the bizarre out of context thing that this guy has latched onto. That is how stoned he is. Once again, Sam and Dean use this moment to plot about Bobby. Sam wants to make sure that Bobby hangs back and doesn't go on this hunt with them for the Alpha. Dean points out that Bobby won't like that at all. Sam reminds Dean that they're trying to keep him away from things that could trigger him into going fully vengeful. And while they're talking, a cop car drives up behind them and flashes its siren a bit, snapping them back to the reality of their situation. But their panic was for naught, because the cop is just as stoned as everyone else, just cruising and blasting, why can't we be friends? Why can't we? Anyway, he's stuffing his face with corn syrup-laced snacks and blooping his siren along to the beat of the song. I don't think he's up to arresting anyone. Oh, and I need to point out that Sam's attitude towards Bobby is, yes, I totally understand him wanting to protect Bobby, do anything he can to keep him from going vengeful, but kind of the way they're going about this is just as kind of dubious as everything else in this episode, like not really telling you the truth about the phone and the way the alpha vampire doesn't really tell them. Sam will eventually just come right out with all the facts, just the way Dean did with this guy that they got blood from. Just say what they want, you know? That's a good policy. But with Bobby, they're still tiptoeing around. And the horrible thing is that just like when they were trapped in that haunted house and Bobby pilfered his flask so that he wouldn't get dragged away when Sam and Dean left, if he had stayed with Sam and Dean, he could have warned them, protected them from the ghost. But no, he stayed behind and then kicked himself for it. And it's almost like Sam and Dean left Bobby's flask behind and are now kicking themselves for it, you know? If they'd brought the flask with them and left it in the car, he couldn't have gone vengeful and run off. Well, he may have still, but it would have been more difficult, and he would have been right there under their noses instead of 4 hours away in a motel room somewhere, you know? So, it may be if they were just honest with Bobby and dealt with him instead of just locking him in a safe and walking away, you know, maybe these things would not have turned out so traumatically. But, you know, if wishes were horses, whatever. Anyway, back to where we are in this episode, and stop skipping ahead, Mittens. Jesus Christ, you didn't write any of this in your notes. Anyway, later that night in the car, they ask Emily questions about the drive to the Alpha's retreat that she had taken before. She gives them distance and time driven, but has no idea about the direction. She does remember that there were loud bells as they pulled up to his house just before dawn. Sam figures it could be a monastery where they wake up at 4 a.m. to pray. And lucky them. There's only one monastery within the driving distance radius that they could have made it to, and it's in Missoula, Montana. And I need to stop here again, because much, much later on, in 1214, Sam will tell the British men of letters that he saw the Alpha Vampire a few years back in Hoople, North Dakota. But he didn't. So did he lie about it? Did he get confused because they got the lead to find him in Hoople and then went on to Missoula? Or did Sam deliberately feed the British men of letters dubious info? Or was it just a writing oopsie where someone didn't check the notes carefully enough and picked the wrong town? Because the Alpha wasn't in Hoople. He's in Missoula. Okay, That's all until we get to season 12, when I'll surely bring this up again to wonder about pointlessly again, I guess. Anyway, they scope out the monastery, and Emily recognizes it. She's sure it's the place she'd been before. It's unfortunately heavily guarded, so they take Emily to a nearby motel to leave her and Bobby behind before they storm the castle. At the motel, they have Emily watching TMZ on the television as they prepare to leave. She asks what a Kardashian is. Dean tells her it's another bloodsucker, and when she looks horrified by that, he has to backtrack and just tells her it's a joke. He doesn't have time to stand there and explain what a Kardashian actually is to her. While Dean locks Bobby's flask in the safe, Sam gives Emily Jody's phone number and tells her to call Jody if they're not back by dawn, that she'll take care of her. When Sam and Dean try to leave, the door slams shut, frightening Emily, and Dean tells her, oh, it's just the wind. But then he mutters to Bobby to chill out. They'll be back soon. Bobby lets them leave at least, but he does not look happy about it. Out in the hall, Sam and Dean bump into a maid as they walk out. Poor maid. Back inside the motel room, Bobby watches Emily. She waits a whole 30 seconds before crumpling up the paper with Jody's number on it and tossing it into the fire. She then confidently picks up the cell phone that she obviously knew how to use all along and calls the alpha vampire to give him the heads up. She is in no way an innocent bystander, and she walks out to head back to the alpha's residence. Despite the fact that Bobby knows this, and knows he needs to let Sam and Dean know this too, he's distracted by a story on TV. It's Gloria, the now Leviathan reporter, talking about Dick Roman. She asks the question that everyone's apparently been asking for months. What makes Dick so hard to beat? And that's all it takes for Bobby to turn completely vengeful, and honestly, I can't blame him. At the monastery, Dean goes over their plan, hoping most of the vampires are sleeping since it's daylight. Sam is distracted, though. He remembers the last time they captured the Alpha, and that it took a dozen hunters and most of them didn't survive. Dean asks if Sam has a better plan, and apparently Sam is choosing diplomacy. They walk right up to the front door in broad daylight while Dean mutters stupid, stupid, stupid under his breath. The front door is unlocked though, and Sam just steps inside. As soon as he does, he's grabbed by a vampire, and when Dean rushes in after him, he's also grabbed. So yeah, maybe that wasn't the best plan. Speaking of bad plans, Bobby is now getting so irate watching Dick on TV that the screen is fritzing out. He's going poltergeist. He's trying different passcodes on the hotel safe. Dean's birthday fails, Sam's birthday fails, and a few more failed attempts drive him to a rage so hard that he blows a lamp across the room. He cracks the mirror, sends a couple of drawers in the dresser shooting open, and the fireplace roaring. All that noise draws the maid's attention, who knocks and asks if everything's okay. But Bobby realizes Dean used his own birthday for the code. But it's too late. The maid has let herself in. She feels a chill, blows out a frozen breath, and then is confronted as Bobby appears before her. She's terrified, but he begs for her help. When she tries to run away, Bobby rushes forward and possesses her. He says he just needs her for a little while. And in the broken mirror, we see it's Bobby's reflection going to the safe to retrieve his flask. And that was one of the warning signs that Sam pointed out earlier that Bobby would have gone too far, possessing someone. I mean, next comes killing and losing his humanity, so it's all about the mission for Bobby now. Back at the Alpha's monastery, he's seated at the head of a banquet table in what we might recognize as Crowley's throne room chair from Hell North in later seasons, When Sam and Dean are shoved into the room, Emily comes strolling in with a grin, says hi, and walks over to the Alpha, like greeting an old friend. Dean is impressed with her acting skills. She had him completely fooled. She chalks it up to doing what she had to protect her daddy, and isn't that just creepy as fuck? And Dean says, no, they have a better plan. Sam just wants to talk. The Alpha calls them out on that, like, laughing, like, of course you want to talk now that you've been completely disarmed. What other choice do you have? Dean says they were so armed because they thought the Alpha might hold a grudge for the last time they met. When Dean snarks back that that was more of their grandpa than it was of them, one of the guard vampires just slams his face into the table. The Alpha intends to torture Sam and Dean to death as Sam tries to convince him that the Alpha needs them. They know what the plague that's killing vampires is. And Sam asks what he knows about the Leviathan. That they're poisoning the food supply. The Alpha casually replies that Roman didn't mention that when they met for dinner last fall, because they're on excellent terms. They've made lots of plans together. And Dean counters that with disbelief because of what the Leviathans intend to do to the human population. The Alpha said that yes, Roman promised that it would be easier for the vampires to eat as well. Sam then gets really impatient with him, like, how can you be this stupid to think the Leviathans would tolerate competition for the food supply? Especially with the evidence that the blood supply has been poisoned. The Alpha just brushes off this concern. He thinks Sam is only saying this because they need him. And Sam is just incredulous, like, you are the ones who are burning from the poison blood, not us. I mean, yeah, humanity's turning into dopey dipshits, but, you know, they're not dying on instant contact with the corn syrup. The Alpha asks why they're telling him this and giving him this warning. And Sam replies that they can stop it all. They just need the Alpha's blood to make their weapon. And again, the Alpha does not believe them. Why would they try to save the vampire race? And Dean replies that, well, we don't really want to save the vampire race, but saving you is better than dying with you, so we'll choose that. That seems to unsettle the Alpha just a little bit, but he's distracted by a little boy who comes in the room, which is again creepy, another young blood slave like Emily was. The boy is only there to tell the Alpha that Edgar has arrived. Dean takes that as instant proof of everything that they just told the Alpha, and he wants to prepare for battle to gather everything with borax in it. But the Alpha just calmly orders his minions to lock Sam and Dean in the study. As they get dragged out kicking and screaming, the Alpha advises them that he hasn't lived as long as he has by jumping to conclusions. And I love this line so much. Because the Alpha is truly taking all of this into consideration here, everything that Sam and Dean have just told him. He's not blindly trusting them, but he's also not blindly dismissing them. And it's also a bit of advice to Sam and Dean here, that they shouldn't jump to the conclusion that their information has been dismissed either. As they leave, the Alpha mutters to Emily that it never hurts to get the story first. Meaning, you know, he'll hear Edgar out. He still doesn't really have a fear of the Leviathans. He still thinks that he's in partnership with them. The only one who knew right away was Crowley. That, nope, there is no talking to Dick. There is no partnership with Dick. But then again, Dick didn't try and extend a partnership to him like he seems to have done with the Alphas, so it probably made it a little easier to see that. But the Alpha has no doubt in his own ability to be the master of everything. He was the most powerful monster on the planet for so long. He just has no idea how to react when he's not. And it's just painfully clear here. In the study, There's IV poles set up with blood bags and a fridge filled with more blood. The Alpha, at least, would be safe from the plague for a little bit, but he's busy meeting with Edgar. The Alpha invites him to sit, and he's dying to know why Edgar is there. And I just love the phrasing that they choose. Edgar is even more calm and ice cold than the Alpha is, though, and replies that he thinks the Alpha knows why he's there, because he smells Sam and Dean Winchester. Sam and Dean, meanwhile, are looking for any way to break out of that study. Sam wonders if Edgar is there because Leviathan figured out they need the Alpha's blood to make the weapon, and Dean says it doesn't really matter in that moment, because however it shakes out, it's bad news. He can't figure out why the Alpha would have locked them in there. Like, we just told you he's coming to kill us all. Like, why would you lock the only two guys who know how to fight these things away? Sam rationally points out that they are the Alpha's enemy. And the Leviathan are, like, kind of monster cousins with him. Of course he'd given the benefit of the doubt to Edgar. And then Sam wonders if the vamp poisonings may have been an accident. Maybe Edgar's there to fix it. Meanwhile, Dean thinks the Alphas just thinks he's invincible because he has never been challenged like this, and he doesn't know what he's actually up against. And then even Sam agrees that the Alpha is no match for Edgar. Dean looks around and spots a needle on one of the IV bags and wonders if they could pick the lock with it. Sam points out that even if they do, they don't have any weapons, until Dean pulls out one last syringe of vamptonite that he'd hidden in his boot. Nice hiding place there, Dean. Back in the dining room, and honestly great metaphorical choice for this meeting spot, the Alpha asks if Edgar wants Sam and Dean, and says he'll have them sent out to him. When Edgar seems pleased by this, the Alpha casually mentions those nasty rumors that Sam and Dean were peddling. He says it must be a mistake, and Edgar replies, of course it was a mistake, you're right, just like butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. Meanwhile, Sam and Dean have escaped from the study and are creeping their way downstairs when Sam is grabbed from behind. Dean uses the last of their vamptonite to kill the attacker and marvels at just how fast it works. But now they need knives. And they go off to hunt some down. Back in the dining room, the Alpha paces around while Edgar calmly stands there. The Alpha addresses his concerns about the additive that's killing vampires. He's heard nothing back from the Leviathan and asks where on their agenda fixing this plague would fall. Edgar calmly strolls over, looks him in the eye, and says, "Nowhere." That they want all the vampires to burn. The Alpha force pushes Edgar away, and Edgar just chuckles. The Alpha says Roman promised a reward for his silence, for not fighting against the Leviathan takeover. And Edgar replies that yes, it's to lay down and die. Everything that eats humans, aside from the Leviathan, has to die. Because there's only 7 billion humans to go around, and apparently that's not enough for the Leviathans to have any leftovers. Poor Emily is kind of looking scared at this kind of talk, and it's Edgar's turn to fling the Alpha around a bit. The Alpha argues back that they are related. He's the son of Eve. He's furious about this. And Edgar calls him a pathetic mutt. And dismisses Eve as a whore. So I guess that sort of answers the question about what Eve was, yes? Or close enough that I've just accepted that she was a Leviathan. But the Alpha reacts badly to someone bad-mouthing his mama, shoves Edgar into the wall, and grabs the wine chiller bucket from the dining room table and splashes the contents all over Edgar. And surprise, surprise, it was filled with borax. So I guess he actually did give at least a little credit to what the Winchesters told him. Edgar fights him off until he recovers enough from the borax to say that he needs every last drop, meaning of the Alpha's blood. He knows that the Alpha's blood is key to killing the Leviathan, and he does not want to leave a single drop behind for the Winchesters. And as if on cue, the Winchesters come running in behind him before he can take a bite of the Alpha and hack off his ugly Leviathan head. And in a ploy that we'll see repeated in the next episode when they go after Dick, Dean goes in as a decoy with a small knife, drawing Edgar's attention away, to give Sam a chance to sneak up behind him and hack his head off. It apparently takes two to kill the Leviathan now, which makes it extra interesting that when Dean and Cass run this ploy on Dick next, Dean still plays decoy while Cass delivers the death blow. And I'll talk about it more next week, obviously. But Cass, who doesn't want to fight, who wants Sam and Dean to just be able to clean up his mess for him, is the one to actually take care of his problem in the end. And that Dean will trust him enough to give him the real weapon and hold the decoy himself, you know? But again, I'll wax poetic about all of this next time. I just wanted to point out the symmetry here, because it hits harder when you know what you're looking for. While the Alpha is still getting up from the floor, Dean goes for his knife and moves in like he's about to attack and just take the blood that they need. The Alpha's recovered, though, and flings Dean across the table. The Alpha just calmly asks if they want to fight or if they just want his blood. He offers it to them freely for having taken care of Edgar. He very calmly fills an incredibly impractical fancy glass and then hands it over. Sam doesn't want to leave the little boy behind with the vampires, though. They realize that they have no power to take Emily back. She's 20 years old. She can make her own choices about her life. But this little boy? Nah, they're not leaving him with this vampire. If they can't save Emily, they can at least save one little kid. When Sam and Dean don't even say thank you as they're about to leave, the Alpha taunts them a little bit, that it kills them that they can't just execute him on the spot and will have to come back to try again later. Dean agrees, and on their way out points to Edgar's corpse and warns the Alpha not to keep that head too close to the body. As they leave, the Alpha says, "See you next season." In yet another, "Haha, there is more plot for me in this story next season" moment. Unfortunately for Dab, he wouldn't get to pay off on that for 5 more seasons. Oh well. Back at their motel later that night, Sam and Dean complain about how they were treated when they took the boy to the police. They were apparently accused of having abducted the boy in the first place, and then had to escape out a window. It's not like they could just tell the police, oh well, yes, he'd been captured by vampires and held prisoner for however long. Poor guys. When they get there, the door to their motel room is ajar, though, and inside, they realize they have a much bigger problem when they see the mess that Bobby made and that his flask is gone. Sam tries to track Bobby with the EMF meter, but the trail is going cold. Sam tries to break it gently, but Dean already knows that Bobby is gone. He's gone vengeful. And he's not really Bobby anymore. Dean's heart is breaking, and Sam tries to remind Dean that it's not really Bobby. He's not thinking. They're halfway to having their weapon ready to go, and Dean's wondering if they should just keep plowing forward with it at all. You know, they gotta find Bobby before he does something really stupid. And Sam says it's what Bobby would want them to do, right? That's what he'd been pushing them to do the whole episode. Dean lists off Bobby, Frank, and Cass without his marbles as allies that they've lost, and snarks that at least they have Crowley in their corner, since their entire plan now relies on Crowley. And then Dean asks, what could possibly go wrong? And we cut to Dick Roman's office, where he's just summoned Crowley into a devil's trap. So I guess that's one thing that could possibly go wrong. And that is where this episode ends. It's mostly just plot-dense sprinting toward the season's endgame goals, and we get a little more emotional fallout in the next episode, but so much of that just gets shoveled off into the next season anyway. So did I forget to rant about anything? I hope not, because next week we have a lot to talk about. In Season 7, Episode 23, Survival of the Fittest. So I guess everyone but the Leviathans are the fittest, in the end. At least they don't have a long drive from Missoula to Whitefish to regroup for their final assault on Dick. Kind of glad we're reaching the end of the season of Dick jokes, too. Anyway, until next week, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord and Blue Sky as MittensMorgul. Or you can email me at mittensmorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And my throat does hurt, so I think I'm going to stop talking now, but I don't even know what else to say about this one. Except I realize that I talk with my hands far too dramatically, and I keep hitting the microphone, so apologies if I did that a lot in this episode, but again, not feeling great and not kind of noticing what I'm doing, so. I hope everybody else is doing real well. Anyway, have a good one, everyone.